Good morning. We are broadcasting live from MIT's newest redevelopment project, Mapletree High Tech Park at Kallang Way. We embarked on this redevelopment project in July 2019, way before COVID, and are pleased to announce that the final block received its completion certification in March. My name is Melissa from the IR team, and today we have Kuo Wei, our CEO, Lily, our CFO, Serene next to me, Head of Asset Management, and Kim, the Head of Marketing. We will be using the slides that were uploaded last evening. Without further ado, I'll pass on the mic to Kuo Wei, who will give an update of MIT's 4Q and full year results.
Hello. Yeah, good morning. This is a virtual pass. She did not actually pass the mic to me. So yeah, I'm happy that all of you could join us. You can hear a lot of echo. This is to showcase how large our space is. This is a new facility. As what Melissa mentioned, we just obtained a temporary occupation permit in February and March for the two blocks, respectively. So, we are talking about very large floor space of about 37,000 sq ft per floor. And this echo you hear is an indication, you know, of the kind of span and space that we can offer. And for the financial year, as what Melissa mentioned, we have uploaded the deck of slide last evening. We'll go through the usual segments. Let's see whether my lightsaber works. Okay. The five usual segments, we talk a little bit about the highlights, then we'll give an overview on the financial performance, then we update the portfolio information, give you a snapshot of our investment update, and also we talk a little bit about the outlook and strategy. Now, going on to the highlights, you would see from the top-line perspective, the first set of bullet points, property income and even distributable income, we have seen meaningful increases. Oh, sorry, I forgot to do the click. Now, in terms of net property income, just a shade below 10%, $580 million for the full financial year. Distributable income, that one has taken into account the interest cost impact. It's still giving us a meaningful 1.6% increase year-on-year, but of course, a big part of the downward adjustment driven by interest expense kind of a drag. On the DPU basis, we are delivering $0.1357, which is 1.7% down. This is mainly driven by the enlarged unit base that we have from the distribution reinvestment plan that we have in place and some of the units fees and units that we have issued. So the second set of bullet points is the highlight that we wanted to share, the full completion of this development. We're talking about the single largest redevelopment project that we have taken on, and it's about 860,000 sq ft, 730,000 sq ft of net lettable area. As of now, we are about 44% pre-committed, so we certainly anticipate the contributions from this development from this financial year onwards. Now, the next set of bullet points on the portfolio performance, from the valuation perspective, year-on-year, we are seeing a 0.1% increase, very marginal. Of course, there are some pluses and some minuses. Some of you, I think if you had a bit of time to look at the information that we have shared, you will see that for some of the Singapore assets, we have seen valuation declines, mainly driven by shortening land tenures, and there are some effects from the market. For example, Singapore's introduction of higher stamp duties that has an impact finally on the valuation. But on the U.S. data center side, we are seeing very good support level, and in fact, we are seeing a small upshift in the valuations on an aggregate basis, despite seeing the expansion in cap rates in some of the markets, the range of cap rate expansions roughly 25-75 basis points, but the rent escalations that we have embedded in the leases, as well as a fairly strong market demand in some of the tier one locations, allow us to see a fairly decent level of support from the valuation perspective. So we are seeing small positive contribution down there. So in aggregate, we are seeing a 0.1% increase for valuation. Now, occupancy is 94.9% for the portfolio. This has come down a little when you compare quarter-to-quarter basis. Essentially, it's driven by the mathematical effect of the completion of Kallang Way, this new project, because at completion, the space that we have would be included in the denominator for calculation of the occupancy level. So it's come down a little. Putting that aside, I think, or if we do not include that effect, our occupancy actually would have increased a little bit. On the capital management front, we continue to have a very strong, healthy balance sheet. Borrowings about three quarters hedge, and a weighted tenure, a very healthy 3.5 years. And of course, many of you know we have the distribution reinvestment plan program that we started 5 quarters back, and we have just recently suspended it. So for this round, we have about $184 million raised, and this has helped us fund our current development project, and we of course have a stronger balance sheet because of this initiative as well. The leverage ratio, as I alluded to earlier, in terms of the health of the balance sheet, is only 37.4%. So it gives us a lot of flexibility and headroom to look at opportunities. Now going on to the next slide. Of course, this is an outline of our report card. Ever since we listed the portfolio, on the right, you can see the most recent set of data. So there's a downshift from the previous quarter, but we think we have been working very hard, in containing all these cost pressures and interest rate effect. So it's 3.33 cents for the quarter. And we think in the next financial year will continue to be difficult, but we're working hard to see whether we can continue to deliver good level of distributions. And going on to the next segment, where we outline the financial results. So on slide 8, you would see the year-on-year comparison for the fourth quarter. The revenue, we are experiencing a 4.3% increase. Property expenses, because of the inflation-driven effects and also partly because of utility cost increases as well, is a 5.8% increase. So that gives rise to more muted net property income increase of 3.8%. If you look at some of the downward adjustments, net fair value adjustments, essentially is due to the valuation loss. For fourth quarter, the minus $110 million. Essentially, that is with respect to our book value, driven mainly by the Singapore portfolio adjustment. So from the amount available for distribution perspective, if you look at the bottom line, it's a 3.5% reduction from 90.3 in the previous year for the fourth quarter to $87.2 million. So that gives you that downshift from 3.49 to 3.33 cents. But of course, we see more, I would say, material impact from all these headwinds in the fourth quarter. But for the full year, I think the performance had been still relatively stable. If you look at the next page, on page 9, in aggregate, we are still experiencing a fairly good growth, as I've mentioned earlier. Revenue front, 12.3% increase. The operating expenses, of course, because of cost pressures and then inflation effects, it's gone up almost 21%. So that gives us a net property income increase of 9.7% from 471 to 518 million dollars. So if you look at the real bottom line, the amount available for distribution, despite the interest cost effect, we're still getting a 1.6% increase in terms of the distributable income from 351 to $357 million. So the DPU for the entire financial year, because of the enlarged unit base, if you noted our earlier DRP proceeds, $184 million, this were all converted into units. So that gives rise to the 1.7% reduction in the DPU when you compare year-on-year basis. Now, looking a little bit more closely at the quarter-to-quarter kind of performance, that's on page 10, not a lot of difference from the revenue perspective, a very marginal increase, 0.4%, and some of these are driven by some of the good renewals and new leases that we have done. Operating expenses, I think the increase, while is still happening, is fairly muted. So net property income basis, very stable. I would say almost the same, 0.1% increase from 128.8 to $128.9 million. So if you look at the distributable income on a total amount basis, is a very slight downshift, 1.4% from $88.4 to $87.2 million. So in aggregate, we're seeing a quarter-to-quarter downshift of 1.8% from 3.39 to 3.33. So I think going on to the next page 11, on an NAV basis, if you compare to end of last year and end of the last financial year, 31st March 2022, we have seen some downshift because of revaluation losses, and that has an impact on our NAV. So it has come down from last year 186, end December 190, to what we are ending at 185 per unit. So going on to the next slide 12, that's the picture we have on the valuation. As I mentioned earlier, though if you look at headline numbers, it's a 0.1% increase year on year, but compared to book, because we have taken on the development project and fully crystallized it, and we also have some of the expenses that are capitalized into the balance sheet. So on a like-for-like basis, we see that minus $110 million effect on the portfolio when you compare the book. So the main drivers, I think, for the Singapore portfolio downshift, I mentioned in the earlier slides, essentially due to shortening land tenure and margin effect, and also there's the stamp duty kind of effect that came very recently, I think on the 14th of February, when the budget was announced by the government. So all this had contributed to that downshift for the Singapore portfolio, but I think we are seeing good level of support for the North American data center portfolio that has offset some of this decline. Now on page 13, on the balance sheet, I think it's very stable. We're having a total debt of still at the $2.8 billion level, very marginal change, but we have managed to extend our debt tenure from 3.1 years to 3.7 years. So with refinancing of some of our debt that they come due. So it gives us a lot more, I would say, stability in the balance sheet. And aggregate leverage ratio, very little change, despite us, you know, having taken on the development project. So it remains at around the 37% level as of the end of financial year, 37.4%. So the DRP take-up, I think just to highlight, would always be hovering around the 40% level, and that has been instrumental in us, you know, containing any leverage increase, despite, you know, the commitment that, that we have for our project. And if you look at the pie chart on the right, the currency exposure has not changed much. It's still a 20-80 kind of split, 20% Singapore and 80% US dollars. And going on to the next slide, slide 14, where we show the expiration profile of our debt, very well spread. And if you look at the bars on the left, very, very short bars. So I don't think there's any cost worry at all in terms of financing and so-called the expiration exposure. So it's essentially business as usual for us, looking for the right kind of opportunities to lock in rates that I would describe as relatively low, but not low, because the current environment, everything is expensive. So we look for the right windows to refinance this, and in terms of quantum, very, very small. I think we're talking about $300 million over 2 years. Now, going on to slide 15, on the financial indicators for our exposure, in terms of fixed rate debt, is 3/4, very little change from December. So we're keeping this at a fairly high level to, you know, cushion us from any of the uncertainties in the market. The weighted hedge tenor has shifted down a little, mainly due to time regression, but the all-in cost has, of course, shifted up a little from 3.3% in the previous quarter to 3.5% because of the movements, upward movements in the market. In terms of coverage ratio, it's still very healthy, depending on which metric you look at. 4.5 times for the quarter. We have trailing 12 months, we're talking about 5 times. So I think what we have out, say, at the bottom is a simulation on the effects of base rate increases, you know, on our DPU. So we think certainly there will be negative impact, but it will be quite well contained because of the hedges we have in place. So you look at every 50 basis point DPU impact, 0.7% kind of downshift. So that one, I think, is still very manageable. And next, I think we go on to the portfolio update, starting from 17. So the total portfolio remains the same level, $8.8 billion, and very little kind of adjustment in terms of the profile. We are still roughly 50-50 in terms of North America, Singapore, and data centers are slightly shade above 50% in terms of representation at 53.7%. And going on to the occupancy chart, the that's on page 18. If you look at the various segments, very stable. The only downshift is a mathematical effect for high-tech buildings, 94.8 to 87.5%, because of the inclusion of this newly completed building. So that gives rise to the 94.9% aggregate figure for the portfolio. So I think we would say steady as she goes for as far as occupancy is concerned. And on page 19, for the lease expiration profile, we do not have any material kind of, say, expiring leases to be, say, concerned about. It is very well spread over, you know, the various financial years. and for financial year 23-24, only 16% due for expiration. But of course, some of you would have been tracking, you know, our releases and data shared. The few of the larger ones that we'll be tracking more closely are the U.S. Data center expirations, for example, the AT&T ones that will be expiring end of 2023. So that brings us to slide 20, our top 10 tenants profile in aggregate, just below 30%, 29.5% of gross rental income. And the tenant that we will be keeping a closer watch on in terms of the expiration of leases, AT&T, the second largest tenant in aggregate, 5.4%. But whereas for the rest, I think, is essentially having leases that are expiring many years, you know, from current financial year, so we don't have any kind of near-term expiration exposure to you know, be concerned about. And going on to slide 21, the trade diversification across all the different industry segment, I think, remains very, very diversified. So that gives us a lot of kind of protection against any segment or sector coming under stress. And going on to slide 22, for the Singapore portfolio performance, occupancy, as I've outlined earlier, is down. There's a downshift because of the new completion. Whereas for the rental levels, we are still seeing a good level of upshift from 215 to 216. And the effect of this, essentially, you can see on page 23. For most cases, when you compare before, after, the green bars before renewals and the blue bars after renewals, we are seeing positive rent revisions. But you might have noticed for high-tech buildings, there's a downshift of about 11.5%. This is essentially due to us, you know, working on a renewal of a fairly large tenant, and it's a more defensive position, having the tenant, you know, giving a bit of incentive to the tenant for the renewal. So that accounted for that downshift, which we think is reasonable. If you look at the rate, it is still very much higher than average for that property segment, and also higher than new rents that we can get. So that is the adjustment that we have accommodated. And if you were to exclude that effect in aggregate, the portfolio is getting roughly 6% positive rent revisions, so that is still encouraging. As you may remember, the previous quarter we're talking about 8.5%, so it has probably moderated down a little, but it's still in a positive territory. I think this is probably the fifth quarter where we are seeing, on a general basis, that the rent positive rent revision. And going on to page 24, in terms of retention level, nothing exceptional to highlight. I think we have been successful in keeping most of our tenants. So in aggregate, we're talking about 80%, 80.7%. And more of our tenants, of course, stay with us for you know, long periods of time and extending beyond the first term of lease with us. And of course, there are quite a few initiatives that we have taken on page 25. That's essentially on the sustainability front. And you might see, yeah, there's a photo of us working hard, greening our space. This is at our current cluster here. We have promised to plant 10,000 shrubs, if you care to count. I don't know how we can verify, you know, and tag every single plant, but 10,000. And 296 trees, that's a little easier to count. So that's one of the trees which we did. We did this exactly 2 weeks back here. And on Lily's right is Chairman Mr. Chia of the Mapletree Industrial Trust Management, and on my left is Mr. Paul, and he's a chair of the audit committee. So we continue to plan, and I think if you look at the broad initiative at a group, 100,000 trees by 2030, so there will be a lot of planting to do. And on the renewable energy side, I think we continued on with the initiatives for the phase two project. We have successfully installed 4,000 kilowatt peak or 4 megawatt peak. So we are embarking on a third phase for the rest of our buildings in Singapore. So hopefully over time, you know, we have a portfolio that is more and more climate resilient. Now, going on to the investment update, I think that the key thing to outline essentially is completion of this project, which we are in now. And later on, if you have a bit of time, you can have a walk around the premise to have a feel of, you know, the new precinct. So in terms of committed occupancy, now about 44%, we're getting our leasing team to work very hard to, you know, carry on pushing the leasing momentum, and hopefully the trajectory commitment will continue to be strong and allow us to maybe arrive at stable occupancy by the next financial year. So I think finally we have a slide 29 on outlook. I think a quick or simple statement is that 2023 will be challenging. There's still a lot of uncertainties everywhere else. And we don't see any of these so-called macro issues easing away anytime soon. But the comfort we have is there's still a bit of economic growth and activities in Singapore. But the sentiments are, of course, not so positive, you know, especially in the manufacturing segment. And interest rate, while we think is creating a bit of issue for everybody that borrows money, it should be, I would say, giving us a bit of reprieve for possibly by the second half of this year, and then hopefully we can see more muted the kind of interest rate, the shift or growth environment, and it gives us a bit more certainty as well. And for North America, for the data center space, we're still seeing fairly good take-ups in many of the tier one markets. So that said, certain other segments, of course, have been moderating in terms of the demand. But as a property segment, we continue to see a good level of take-up in many of these locations, and that has, of course, been very supportive in the rent levels and the valuation as well for the portfolio. So I think finally we talk about our strategy. It has remained the same. We'll keep the portfolio resilient, and certainly capital structure is very sound. We retain a lot of flexibility, and of course, for growth, we continue to look at acquisitions, developments like this one at Kallang Way, and we will look at opportunistic divestments of non-core assets as well. I think that was also one of the outline that we have mentioned in our press release. So it is a good time for us to look at rebalancing the portfolio, look at you know, opportunities for perhaps adjusting the portfolio profile. So if there are good divestment opportunities, we could look at a bit more closely, and then it will help us you know, chart the next phase of growth as well as we look for acquisition possibilities concurrently. So I think that ends what we have for the presentation deck. I'll be happy to take questions.
Thank you, Koi. Can we request for analysts to raise their hands, and we'll pass around a mic for the benefit of webcast attendees. Please state your name. Yeah, thank you.
Hi, Melvin from JP Morgan. Yeah, congrats on the new building. I see a lot of greenery. Hopefully the money will rain down on you from this building.
Yes, thank you.
maybe you can start with the U.S. data center portfolio. I noticed the top end of the range for cap rates has lifted. Maybe give us a sense of, on a weighted average basis, how much the cap rate has expanded by. Second question I have is for that portfolio is, can you touch on the tenancy risk there? Any updates on AT&T lease, ATOS, SunGuard, and Sixtera, or any other tenants do you think could potentially leave or could replace those tenants? Thanks.
Okay. I think, as what you have already pointed out, what we have is a range, 25, 75 basis point, but we see most of them clustered around the 30, 40 level. So if you look at the downshift, you're talking about minus 70% if you're talking at like-for-like basis in terms of value effect.
Sorry, just clarify, the cap rate expanded by
30, 40 basis
points. On average for
yeah,
U.S.
Yeah.
data center. Okay.
So in terms of the so-called tenant exposure, the larger one, which we have outlined, AT&T, we are talking to prospects for the one of the two larger ones, as you might have seen in some of the earlier releases, the two of them expiring in 2023, the San Diego one, 2024 December. So that one is a little early. We do not have any so-called leasing engagements for the San Diego one, but for the Tennessee one, we are talking to a potential user, but it's still at an early stage. Hopefully, we'll be able to crystallize something prior to the expiration of the lease. And this prospect that we are talking to is looking at the entire campus. So that is a kind of match that will be preferred. We would try not to cut up, you know, the campus into a couple of so-called multi-tenanted product offerings. Then is quite a bit more difficult to manage in terms of lease and you know operations. So that's one. ATOS, we are also talking to a potential user. It is still not at a stage where we can crystallize any contract yet, but we recognize that this is probably, from a time perspective, a little bit more critical because the lease expiration is already taken place. So while it's a smaller asset, we will try to see whether we could lock that in as well earlier. Now, for the other tenants, in our portfolio, we have essentially fairly long leases. So it's a case of, you know, the exposure to any of, you know, the issues tenants face. For example, SunGuard, as you have outlined, they will add two of our facilities. They have extended the lease with us for 5 years. So they remained in our premises, but they had, of course, negotiated for some of the lease terms to be changed. For one of the facility, the so-called lease rate, about the same. The other one, they have asked for quite a significant reduction. So we have accommodated that request, because at the end of the day, we'll look at the impact to the portfolio, the downtime, so-called effect as well, and what we can reasonably get from the market for that premise. So in short, for the SunGuard, the so-called issue has been closed, fully resolved. They're continuing with the lease, especially when they have a new shareholder or new owner on board. So it is essentially, you know, back to business as usual. So for the rest of the leases or rest of the tenants, we of course continue to be mindful, you know, of their the operating matrices and whether the facilities are well used, whether they pay on time to make sure that, you know, the portfolio continues to be healthy. So far, we do not have any so-called material things that would cause us any alarm.
So I have this final question for me. How under-rented are your U.S. data centers at this point relative to the market?
Yeah. Okay, at this stage, I think for most of the single-user buildings, quite in line with market. I don't think it's a case of us being able to extract meaningful so-called upshift in rents. So our sense is that if there's any vacancy or any due to expiration of leases or whatever, we'll probably be able to lease at about the same rent levels. The challenge in most of these cases is actually downtime and the rent free and all the tenant incentives that we need to give. So depending on the markets, sometimes you may need to give or you may need to wait up to 6-9 months for finding the right match. So that is a kind of impact that we think we'll try to reduce as far as possible.
Thanks very much.
Hi, this is Terence Lee from UBS. Will we continue to see pressure from the large users in Singapore? In the case of the high-tech one, is it kind of like one-off? And maybe if you could guide on reversions for FY24 as well.
The large tenants is always or handling large tenants is always not easy, because they do have stronger bargaining power, and especially in markets where, or in environments where there are alternatives. So while it's not cheap to relocate, but a lot of large tenants have a capacity, they have, you know, motivations, you know, or I would say attractions from other alternatives. So we would be very commercial in the assessment of this kind of transactions, renewal transactions. So if necessary, we would accommodate some adjustments from the rent perspective if it's more meaningful for us to keep the tenants. So as of now, we do not see any other so-called large tenants in the high-tech space that would present this kind of challenging or so-called situations. So far, most of the other leases that are expiring are not large leases. So it's essentially a business as usual kind of engagement we would have. Now, when we talk about rent revisions for this current financial year, we are, I would say, cautiously optimistic of still getting positive rent revisions. I think high single digits may be difficult, but if you're talking about low single digits, I think it is something that we could push for in aggregate basis. And generally, I think so-called inflation effect is also creeping into the rent kind of rental rate kind of figures. So that would allow us to maybe make some adjustments here and there when we deal with the tenants and the renewals.
Okay. And do you mind reminding us how you hedge your USD income?
For the USD income, we typically hedge using forward contracts, FX forward contracts, and we look at it over rolling 4 quarters. So every quarter, we will put in a little bit of a small percentage of the expected foreign income that's coming in. So as you can expect, then in one particular quarter, it will be an effect of the forward contracts that's been executed over the past 4 quarters. So by doing that, we basically just do an averaging effect. So in times when the exchange rate is going against our favor, we'll be averaging down, and vice versa if market is going up.
I assume you're talking about income. Yeah. So that is a part.
Got it. Thank you.
Yeah.
Concern.
Okay. Yeah, we only have one runner running around.
Concern, David.
He can run fast, but his eyesight not so good. Concern runs marathons, right?
Not
but,
sprint.
Okay.
Not sprint.
Thanks. David from Daiwa. Two questions. The first is, what type of asking rents are you, requesting for this property? What's the range?
Okay, this one we will try more than $4 certainly. I think if you ask him, she's a bit more greedy. She can tell you what the kind of range that we go out with.
Okay. Currently, we are asking $450 per square foot.
$450.
Yes, greedy. As I said, she's greedy.
Yeah, and we are even trying to ask $480 for smaller sizes now. So this is we are definitely higher than our friendly competitor opposite. They are only asking $420. Yeah.
So at the end of the day, if some of you may know, or some of you may be a bit young, pasar malam, when you go to a night market. You haggle and negotiate. So at the end of the day, it is a starting point when you bracket your negotiations. But I think with the kind of demand that we are seeing in the market, while market remains challenging, of course, but I think the kind of feedback we get gives our leasing folks that confidence in trying to push the boundary. But at the end of the day, as you know, it depends on the negotiating position you come down with to a fairly reasonable level, which would still be, I think, a respectable level. What we are trying to do is to try to hit at least $4 per square foot.
And what would be a reasonable assumption of your pre-commitment rate by the end of this financial year?
Okay, if I were to give you a number, that would be set as a KPI for the listing folks. So, okay, I think as of now, of course, 44%, but realistically, by end of the year, if we can get another 20-25%, that would be fairly decent. You'll be talking about 70% or so. So if we were to set some reference level, if I were to round it up, let's try 3/4 done, 75%. Pre-commitment. So this one really depends on whether we can get large users, like the two that we have secured for this building. The first one took up two floors, second one full floor. So this kind of large so-called leases will be very helpful. You just do a few more, you'll be able to hit the target quite comfortably.
And my second or follow-up question is, going back to the U.S. data center portfolio, how many of the data centers saw a decline in valuations? And is there a common denominator? Is it their location, vacancy rates, or the tenant getting a credit downgrade? Is there any common factors for those that saw a loss in the valuation?
Okay, I think quite a few of the facilities, if you do a comparison, about half, you see some downshift in valuations, but mainly driven by the cap rate effect. Of course, that was offset by the built-in escalations, roughly 2-2.5% for most of our tenants. So effect from the market, effect from tenant so-called quality, I think, very muted, if any. The only more meaningful one, if you do a comparison, is the Rancho Cordova asset, minus 47%. That one is the SunGard facility because of the downshift or downward adjustment in the rent level.
Hi, Vijay from RHB. Just a couple of questions. Maybe first one on the follow-up on the Kollam IS side. I mean, in terms of pre-committed level, slightly below where the market is in terms of overall occupancy and what it is. Is it because of the factor which you said that you're holding up to the high rents, that you want to hold up to the rents, that this building is slightly below pre-committed? And also, can you give some color in terms of new demand versus expansion demand seen in the market, especially in light of macro numbers, which seems to have come down quite a bit in the recent months?
Okay. Well, the practical consideration for development projects is that it's quite unlikely to get high commitment or pre-commitment prior to completion, unless it's a build-to-suit project. So while occupancy or the committed occupancy level is lower than average or lower than what we are experiencing in the portfolio, we think this is not an uncommon observation for development projects. So if you look at the past redevelopment or development projects that we have, from completion to steady state occupancy level, you'll probably be looking 1.5-2 years for us to get there. So, of course, your environment, market situation does play or they will play a part in you know how fast or how slow we get there. So we think this is a fairly normal observation for the development project at the point of completion. So that said, we are, of course, getting the team to really work hard in maintaining the momentum. So the kind of aim, I think just now we had a question on the committed occupancy target towards or by the end of the financial year. Hopefully we're about three quarters about there. But I think for us to get to full occupancy, practically full occupancy, you'll probably be talking about the subsequent financial year. And whether it's a 1.5 year or so kind of time frame, we do not know. It really depends on the market demand. And as what you might have observed, there could be certain kind of challenges in certain market segments. So we will want to be a bit more targeted in the approach. The tenants that we think will continue to be interested in this space, the medical technology ones, I think continue to feature. And I think Kim probably can share, you know, some of the other possibilities that we are dealing with or other perspectives we're dealing with.
Okay, I think you just set my KPI for this year. But okay, well, like what Guowei say, for a development project, right, usually the commitment level was slowly built up. So after the TOP, which is now, this month in April, we actually see more increases in terms of viewings and inquiries. So the types of tenants is still the IT town sectors. We see more now of electronic sectors. Bio lab companies are still there. So it is in line with the type of tenants that we're targeting for this building. So, yep. I think we were very hard on it.
My second question is in terms of your strategy on divestment. You mentioned about divestment and rebalancing your profile of your portfolio. Maybe can you elaborate a bit on this? Because I haven't heard divestment word from you for some time. Maybe you do more on redevelopments.
Yeah.
What kind of divestment and where you are planning to rebalance your portfolio to?
Okay. We are looking at it in an opportunistic manner. And you know, as in, say, analogy of managing a garden, you let the plants grow, and you have a very vibrant kind of greenscape, but periodically you will need to do some pruning, some adjustments here and there. If not, you go into a jungle. So we have not done much divestments, and most of the cases very opportunistic. If you have looked at our history over the past 12 years or so, only four done. One was the option to purchase, which is the Equinix data center in Singapore. So that one was part of the deal, part of the transaction. The other three are very small assets. One in the US, two others in Singapore. Single user, end user type of transactions. So it's more driven by, you know, the demand we see coming from, you know, the space users. But we think it's probably a good time, you know, after managing this portfolio for a good period of time, for us to look at a more considered approach. Still opportunistic, but we will look at what makes sense for us to keep for longer periods, what makes sense for us to maybe look at even redevelopment, or on a total return basis, what might be a good time for us to crystallize some value. So it will be cutting across, you know, the portfolio in terms of the review and assessment, so both in Singapore and North America, because at the end of the day, it's about finding that right kind of value that we can crystallize. So it will be quite opportunistic. We would probably be grouping some of the assets together, whether, you know, in a logical manner by type or by so-called location, and we would engage the property brokerage firms in the respective markets to see whether we have a good level of interest. Then we'll see how we can take it forward. So it's about rebalancing, it's about pruning the garden that we have. Then hopefully that would also, other than helping us crystallize good value, it also helps us rebalance a portfolio, you know, allow us to, you know, have the capital to deploy to other more, I would say, relevant or suitable assets for us. So it will probably be a process that will embed in our kind of our so-called strategy going forward. As a portfolio gets to a certain scale, gets to a certain kind of age, this is something we'll probably need to do a little bit more, you know, as time goes on.
Just one follow-up on this. In terms of the mix, are you happy with the current mix of your data center, high-tech buildings? Do you plan to change this mix in terms of assets or geography?
Well, I think the second question, geography, for sure we want to be represented in more locations other than Singapore and North America, mainly US, because while it has worked well in the last couple of years, We of course have strong attributes in both of these markets, but in the long term, diversification would be a primary consideration. We have talked about going into the other more developed markets for the data center space, the European market, the key Asian markets. We will continue to look at these locations. Hopefully, we are able to find, you know, the right asset to bring into the portfolio. So we would want to have greater geographical coverage. And in terms of asset type, for the time being, our focus would still be on data centers. That's the reason why, you know, we'll probably be comfortable with letting the ratio creep up to say 3/4. I think we will talk about the bands earlier, 2/3 to 75%. But at the same time, we are keeping an eye out on the other asset or property types that fall within the industrial mandate, whether they are high-tech buildings, whether they are R&D facilities, or even biotech pharma facilities. So if those opportunities were to surface and we will be, if we were able to find a good match, we would certainly think of bringing them into the portfolio as well. Yeah, sorry.
Hi, this is Tan Xuan from Goldman. My first question is on growth opportunities, right? I guess what you're guiding on acquisition divestment seems quite different from what you mentioned last quarter. Can you share like what has changed?
Okay, the acquisitions will continue to be a mainstay because at the end of the day, the redevelopment or asset enhancement opportunities not so easy to execute. We have a fairly mature portfolio, so we can only look at certain opportunities within the portfolio once every couple of years, you know, depending on the market situation, depending on whether we can find suitable prospects that can anchor, you know, some of these initiatives. And say unutilized GFA is not popping up everywhere. We only have a couple of clusters with a decent amount of so-called unutilized GFA that we could exploit. So acquisitions, whether they are for individual projects or assets or portfolios, will continue to be a driver, and that's what we've been doing in the past. I think the new thing that we have brought to the fore is divestment, because I think as what I have outlined in the earlier response is essential for us to look at rebalancing the portfolio and also pruning the portfolio over time. While if you look at most of our assets, they are getting very good occupancies, even the older facilities. But at the end of the day, as a manager of the portfolio, we'll look at whether it makes sense for us long term, whether on a total return basis, it is an appropriate time for us to crystallize some of the gains against maybe some future value or future unknown. So it is a balance that we're looking at, but there will be mindful of the impact of the portfolio as well, because I think if you just crystallize gains without having a strategy on how to position the portfolio forward, you'll not be meaningful, you know, for the portfolio in the medium to long term.
Can I follow up on, you know, longer term? If you think about divestment and acquisition, what kind of gearing do you think you will be comfortable at, and also how are you thinking about equity fundraising?
Okay, I think leverage level we have now, we are very comfortable. I think we have talked about the 40 to 45% level, which is a band that we are okay with. But at the end of the day, we will be guided by the market, guided by what investors are comfortable with. But I think if you have instances where we say look a little beyond 40%, it's not a big issue because our coverage ratios are still fairly robust. 4.5-5%. So I don't think it will be a big concern for us. And say if there are opportunities available and we need to lean on debt for the time being to execute certain projects that will bring our leverage slightly beyond 40%, I don't think it's a big issue. Now on fundraising part, from our perspective, we would always try to match fundraising exercises with transactions. So to make sure that we put the money to good use. If you look at our historical fundraising exercises, has always been pegged to, you know, transactions or deals. So that is the approach we will likely take. In, you know, managing the portfolio going forward, and we certainly recognize the market is not so clear in terms of fundraising opportunities. Maybe some windows will open up now and then, but at the end of the day, it will be more driven by transactions that we can bring forth, that we can marry to any exercises.
Just a last quick question. Can you share the portfolio rent reversion for fourth quarter and full year?
Fourth quarter, -1.9% because of the high-tech space effect. And if you were to exclude that, roughly 6%. For the full year, I think it'll probably be a 3% or so level. I don't have that full year number. Do we have?
We'll get back to you on the full year number.
Hi, Derek from Morgan Stanley.
Yeah, no problem. Please.
Just want to follow up on the acquisitions angle. We talked about acquiring more data centers in Europe, key Asian markets. What are the cap rates over there looking like right now?
I think the cap rates are still not so helpful. In Europe, we'll probably be talking about the 4% level. We have not seen big adjustments yet, responding to the interest rate increases. For the rest of the Asian markets, you'll still be around the 3 plus to 4% level. If you're talking about the more prime assets. So if you look at it from the perspective of spread, the Asian markets probably look a little more interesting, whether it is Japan or South Korea, relative to Europe or even US. Because in those places, the borrowing cost is quite horrendous. You'll be staring at the 5% kind of figure. And if you look at our equity cost, also, you know, 5+% kind of even in good times. So to get deals to work or for deals to be accretive, you won't be able to find the right kind of opportunities in the market now. The market has not adjusted yet, so we'll be certainly be hunting in all these locations, but I think realistically the Asian markets might present more opportunities in view of the funding so-called conditions.
I think in the UK, Digital Realty has a portfolio that they've been trying to sell for some time, but
yeah.
Is that still too tight for your...
It is for the time being, because I think be mindful of the spread that we can push for. And while we anticipate the say interest rate hikes to be moderating, it is still not moderating yet. So it is a case of whether we think it will be another 25 or 50 basis point more. But would it stay high at that level? If it stays at the same level, you know, without any clarity on when that downshift is going to take place, some of these transactions could still be challenging in the near term.
And on the divestment front, do you have a dollar value target?
It's not driven by dollar value. I think we are looking at the assets that might be suitable, and it's across the portfolio, you know, in terms of location or in terms of the asset type. So we don't have a very specific dollar value in mind, because at the end of the day, it is not a case of us needing a certain amount of capital. So it's a case of, as I mentioned in the garden analogy, pruning and looking at what is relevant, what might be suitable longer term, and if we can crystallize a good value, say upfront relative to looking at future possibilities. So that is the kind of analysis that we'll be doing and deciding which one that we will want to maybe check with the market. So it's not a dollar value driven consideration.
So just lastly, your all in interest, what's your outlook for this year?
Yeah, she has a crystal ball.
As I said, if I have, I won't be here. I'm still looking forward to the beach where I can sip martini and treat at the same time. Well, I think for this quarter, we have actually reported all in interest costs of about 3.5%. I believe that will still continue to move up. The only question perhaps is how far out it will go. So if we, I think right now the market is really expecting that there is going to be a rate hike. The only question is how much, and the expectation is even there is not going to, I think the expectation is about 25 bps. So if that continues, I think the interest cost, our interest cost will continue to creep up, but you will not be seeing very significant jump as what we have seen in the past few quarters.
Hi, it's Ezean from OCBC Credit Research. So this is two-thirds to 75% data centers is actually quite a large number compared to what I imagined. Maybe I missed out on a few quarters. I may be wrong. But in any case, do you have a timing for when you want to achieve this this target? Then the second question is, you're currently at BBB plus by Fitch. Is this something that you would be willing to cut? Because if you hit, say, 40 to 45%, which you're comfortable with, would it have implications on your credit rating? And the last question is, you mentioned about the trees that you're trying to plant. So it led me thinking that in terms of industrial properties, can you share with us what is Singapore government's plans in terms of greening this? Yeah, that's all.
Okay. Well, the last one, I don't have a great deal of insights. I'll elaborate on that later. But in terms of the so-called profile of the portfolio, when we first started going into the data center space, the first transaction, we only had 10% of the portfolio that is data center. So at that time, we were looking at, you know, what would be a right kind of representation. And that band of data center representation has shifted up over time. So at various engagements with investors and, you know, the research firms, we have adjusted that up. And also that's partly driven by the support that we have received from market and investors in us, you know, having a larger representation in this space. So we have shifted that up about 2-3 years back to 50% to two-thirds, you know, which is whether 65 or 66%. And from about 1.5-2 years back, you know, looking at the situation and looking at the opportunities available, we ventured a upshift in the band. Yeah, maybe possibly beyond two-thirds to maybe 75%. That is a possibility. So that one is also for us to gauge the level of support, level of interest. But I think at this point in time, it is safe for us to say we are not turning ourselves into a data center REIT. So we will of course continue to recalibrate the exposure. As of now, we're talking about 53.7 or 54%. And we will probably move up to two-thirds soon. I think if you look at the pipeline, the very ready pipeline is a sponsor's balance 50% stake in the digital portfolio that we acquired in 2019 and early 2020. So that one will move us closer to the 60% level. So that one, I think, is well prepped. And if we are able to crystallize a few more, yeah, I think two-thirds probably in the next year or two is that kind of possibility. That very much, of course, depends on whether we can do that portfolio type of deal or not. If it's a asset-by-asset incremental one, yeah, we'll probably need to stretch that by another year or two. So we'll eventually get there. To that kind of representation in the short to medium term. But would we want to push for 75 as a target? No. We are only looking at that as a band that we might see how the portfolio would be represented. It is not a destination. It is not a case of us saying we want to be 75% or we want to be 70% so that this is optimal mix, because at the end of the day, we are also looking at other types of industrial assets, whether they are high-tech, R&D spaces. If economics work, if the attributes work, that will be another dimension, because at the end of the day, we recognize that for a platform to be evergreen and to be relevant, we need to respond to the market and we need to have a good level of diversification, because we won't be able to make the right bets all the time. Market shifts, demand would shift over time. So that is a kind of consideration we have. So we don't have a very fixed time frame, but we think with the trajectory going this way, yeah, that is maybe a 3-5 year kind of possibility. Maybe we hit 75 if we have all the right elements in place. We do a few more portfolio transactions, but I think before we arrive there, we'll probably have a lot more conversations and engagements with the community and see whether there's any need to recalibrate and readjust. Now on the on the greening of the facilities or the guides, we don't have very specific kind of guidance, because at the end of the day, we recognize that many of the industrial facilities, especially the ones that are non-air-conditioned, difficult to secure, say, the local standards, the green mark standards. The facility that you see down here, this block 161-163, platinum, BCA green mark platinum, we have secured that because it's air conditioned. We have put in a lot of features like low ETTV, so-called design for the premise. And we would incorporate as many of the features or green features as possible, other than efficient ACMV systems. We're talking about tree planting, and in future for this, we will be looking at possibilities of the solar panels as well. We have not put in any solar panels for this building yet at this present moment, though we've embarked on initiatives for many of our other classes, because we are looking at the tenants' needs, requirements at, say, the roof space first before we lock some of this in. But this will be a feature that we'll be looking at. Then, especially for newer buildings, new builds, high-tech facilities, we would, of course, track, you know, the guidance given by the government, and also within the certain of the sustainability framework, of course, for measurable ones, for ones that you get certifications, we would aim towards those certifications. I think we have our line in one of our releases. For new builds, we will look for at least a green mark goal for our new builds. But we'll be mindful of certain constraints, like if there's a non-air conditioned facility or old facility, it's practically not possible, but we do what we can. So things like solar panels, energy saving, light fittings, things like that will do.
Thank you. I think we might have to end the briefing shortly, but I'll take two last questions. I know the gentleman in white, and maybe Brendan.
Yeah, Dale from DBS. Just a very quick question for me. Going back to the high-tech building, you know, the renewals, I understand that you said that it's because of a large tenant renewing,
yeah.
But just trying to wrap my head around why that big drop. Because, I mean, you know, we've been hearing about rentals still being very strong over the past 2 years, growing. And at the same time, you know, in terms of the new leases signed for high-tech, it's also significantly below your passing rents. So just wondering, you know, is all of this one-offs, or, you know, is this a sign of where rentals will be trending? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, a quick response to that is that the renewal rents that we're signing is still quite respectable relative to the market. The reason for that downshift is because of the mechanics built into the earlier lease, the expiring lease, because there were escalations built in, and we managed to have the you know, original lease pegged at fairly high levels. So while the market has been supportive, But relative to what is in place, we think it is reasonable for us to accommodate that adjustment. So at the end of the day, would we be able to, we have to, you know, make that assessment, would we be able to push for the rents to be the same or an increase that would be slightly higher than market that might encourage the tenant to really look at alternatives or not? So, of course, if a tenant were to come back to us and ask for half price, then easy discussion. But it's about looking at that balance and the kind of managing that exposure and uncertainty. For high-tech space, the kind of comparison, say, for the new rents might, relative to, say, in place or passing rents, may not be instructive in certain cases, because our high-tech space is quite a mixed bag in terms of attributes. As many of you would know, high-tech is not a property zone type, so it's partly a marketing term that we use. So our high-tech rent or high-tech space so-called offerings, we have rents that will settle as low as low twos, $2 plus to $4 plus, like what you see down here. So it depends on the deals that we crystallize in that quarter when we do the reporting. So you will fluctuate up and down fairly wildly, you know, within that band. So if you track at if you track the reports that the or figures that we have outlined, you'll find that that volatility is relatively higher. So of course, at the end of the day, is whether we want to have two types or three types of high tech descriptions within our portfolio. But then we don't. It's not as if we have say 1,000 assets, 10,000 assets, where we have large enough kind of scale to give us that good number of data points to represent. So for the time being, you see this kind of fluctuation. But I think observation that we can share is that the market continues to be supportive in this space. So that is not a indication of any weakness in, say, in the demand.
Okay, got it. Yeah, that's clear. Thank you.
Okay. Run.
Hello. Yeah, I just want to touch on the acquisition plans again, right? I think in FY23, you mentioned that the sponsor pipeline is probably off the table, but looking at FY24, does it make better sense now where you're trading?
It is still not the easy kind of execution, even if, say, the sponsor is looking at doing that transaction, because while we are at the small premium over NAV, from the capital cost perspective, it is, especially when we take into consideration the borrowing cost, both on the borrowing cost, it is still quite close to the cap rates that we are seeing. So getting the deal to be reasonably accretive is not easy. So you have to still wait for the right market conditions. And of course, depending on the sponsors, so-called plans for the divestment. So it's something that we would want to plan for, but is really driven by the sponsor's own considerations and also the market readiness.
So is it correct to say that the underlying yield of that portfolio is about what?
Five plus. Yeah. So
okay.
the case is whether we can find the right window for us to execute the transaction.
Okay, thanks.
Right, thank you very much. I think we can take the questions offline, but right now we have to end the webcast. Just a note to apologize for the late delay of this briefing. Thank you very much and have a good day.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for joining us.